You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
And how are you?
I'm great.
Devin, how are you?
I'm tired and I have allergies. It's early, guys. This is early for a Saturday morning.
Yes, it is early for a Saturday morning. Not early for normal, but for a Saturday morning,
yes. For a Saturday morning it is. But, you know, I guess you got to get up early and prepare for a full slate of college football today, right?
Oh, yes.
The best part about Saturdays in the fall?
Yes, this is true.
But we're not going to talk about that just yet.
No, because...
We're going to talk about the other stuff.
We're going to talk about the other stuff because in 2 weeks... 2 weeks from this very day, Jazz preseason kicks off. And, oh, we have some Jazz news to talk about. John?
We do. Any little bit counts in the offseason.
Yes, it does.
Sports Illustrated put out their top 100 NBA players list for the upcoming season, and the Jazz had 5 in the top 100, which is what you want. So going through the list... Joe Ingles came in at 65. Bojan Bogdanovic came in at 52. Donovan Mitchell came in at 29. Mike Conley came in at 26. And Rudy Gobert came in at 14. And it's just one of those things where if you're going to put together a playoff team, you want to have those players that are going to be in those top lists. And the Jazz got 5 in the top 100. I think that's pretty solid.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I believe the Jazz are the only team that had all starting 5 in the top 100.
Wait, are you declaring?
I was checking on that. I think that's true, but I'm not 100%.
Are you declaring that that's the official starting 5?
Well, let's say it is.
Yeah, true.
I would say it's the official closing 5.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Or maybe we should say I don't know, maybe they're the only team with 5 in the top 100.
Every year for the last 4 years, whatever, we talk about these lists. I mean, ESPN is still to come, I think. They're a little bit later than the rest, and theirs has been weird the last couple of years. But so, SI Top 100, how do you feel about the placement of said players at this point?
I think all of them are fair, and I'll just go through. I didn't write them all down, but Rudy came in 14, and these are the ones who were above him. Giannis is number 1, Kawhi is number 2, LeBron number 3, and then you go Steph Curry, James Harden, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Jokic, Paul George, Dame, Jimmy Butler, Russell Westbrook, Karl Anthony Towns, and then Rudy Gobert. And right after him is Kyrie Irving. And surprising to me, number 16 was LaMarcus Aldridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is surprising. Does it surprise you that Jokic got that high?
No.
Okay.
Now, if you think about it, Denver was 2nd in the very, very difficult West last year, and he is easily the best player on that team. I'm not surprised.
Okay. And it's not that I'm grasping at straws, folks. I'm not trying to start something. That was the name that stuck out to me at first when I saw the top 10 list that I thought, is he too high? Yes, no. And I agree with where Rudy's at. Could he be a little bit higher? Yeah. I think it was, who did I see on Twitter? It might have been David Locke mentioned that Rudy is a top 10 player. And I think on some lists, he could definitely be a top 10 player. Where this list is and with the players ahead of him, I'm not going to argue 14 because I don't think that's bad.
Yeah.
So, and having Conley and Mitchell there 3 spots from each other is not bad either.
Yeah, I think what kind of holds Mitchell back is his efficiency. But I think Conley and Mitchell together are going to complement each other so well that they're going to be one of the best backcourts in the NBA.
Right, and the efficiency argument. I mean, I get it. I don't know that the efficiency is end all be all, which is why I take a step back when I read people talking about how Donovan Mitchell's just so not efficient and not a great player type of thing. Because there's more to a star player than efficiency. I mean, we could go back over the history of the NBA and see some of the top 50 greatest players ever to play and would argue that some of them were not efficient by that definition. So efficiency is not the end all be all, but you're right. That probably is what holds him back a little bit. And he's going to be a more efficient player in the coming years.
Yeah, he will be. And the comparison is often made to Dwayne Wade for Mitchell as far as who his game is patterned after. And Mitchell's efficiency is actually better than what Dwayne Wade's efficiency was his first 2 years.
Right.
So I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts on the top 100 list?
Nope.
All right. Well, that was a quick Utah Jazz note. Let's move on to some NBA news. And
Wait, am I forgetting something? I think it was announced since our last show. There's a Jazz open house coming up, and I think we need to let the people know. Am I the only one who knows this?
I think so. I think I missed it. Please let the people know. I believe
it's on October 4th. They're doing their scrimmage, open house, meet the team event.
That's a Friday.
So I could be mistaken, but keep an eye open for it. I've been to those in the past. They've been fun. They've been worthwhile. So should be free for the whole family. Go on down and check it out.
Yeah, and that is, like you said, that is a Friday evening. I'm used to them doing it on a Saturday evening, but it does usually fall on that first weekend in October. It may be
the Saturday, maybe on the 5th.
Yeah, it's usually been around October 5th, but October 5th is their preseason game against the team from Australia. I forget their names. So October 4th sounds right. That's the night before. That sounds reasonable. So
I'm trying to find it, but I'm not going to find it that fast.
I'd have to open my Jazz app, and you know, I mean, my phone is over there, so.
Oh, his phone is over yonder, people. So.
So, all right. Check it out. The scrimmage is fun to go to. I agree. And with a season that is buzzing with excitement like this, it's worth the time to spend with it. So, all right. Well, that is Utah Jazz notes for the week. Moving on to NBA news and notes. What do you want to touch on? I saw some notes on USA Basketball.
Yeah. First thing I wanted to note is since we last recorded, the U.S. wound up finishing in seventh in FIBA. And since then, Steph Curry and Damian Lillard have already pledged that they will be on the Olympic team in 2020. And as such, the U.S. did not lose their seeding for the 2020 bracket. So, many are looking at FIBA as a wake-up call, but I think the only wake-up call for is just how many of the top guys in the NBA didn't want to participate. I think a lot of the guys that sat out this one are going to play in the Olympics next year, and the U.S. will still be fine.
I agree. And it's funny, you know, a minute ago we mentioned Donovan Mitchell's efficiency, and I've already seen people say, because he committed to play in the Olympics. So already you have people saying, yeah, he's not going to get much playing time because the stars are coming back. It's like, why do we do this? So of note, just to make this clear, Donovan Mitchell's made himself available to play in the Olympics. I think that's exciting. That's awesome. And I think he's going to be a contributor, a very good contributor.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and then did you say, we talked about all of it. Did you say who won it all, right? You did?
Spain.
Spain and France went at it, right? Wasn't it? No, it wasn't. No. Spain and France. It was Spain and...
No, France took bronze.
Yeah,
Spain against?
It was Argentina.
Argentina, that's right. It was.
Yeah.
Argentina, Luis Scola. So...
Yes, 55-year-old Luis Scola leading that Argentina team to a silver medal. And then the bronze medal game was actually, you know, something of interest to Jazz. You had Rudy against Joe.
Again.
So, I mean, yeah. I get the feeling there's going to be a little bit of talk about this, at least early in the season. in the Jazz locker room.
Well, yeah,
I think eventually you let it go a little bit, maybe. But
I think Rudy and Joe are going to have the talk. They are going to be the kings of talk all year long. Donovan's got no say in this matter.
And here's the thing. I'm not sure if you guys saw it. I saw that there was a quote from Rudy that he had been interviewed about Team USA's performance when they lost to France. And he was saying, you know, they put together a good team, but we're a good team too. They lost to a good team. You know, I think Rudy kind of put that in perspective, because a lot of people are saying, oh, well, USA lost. This hasn't happened since, you know, 2006, I think it was. Hashtag thanks, Obama.
Wow. What? Anyway, continue.
So, I mean, it seems like this big letdown, but you realize that the world has gotten significantly better. I mean, think about the perspective of the NBA. John, am I wrong that there are significantly more international players than there were in 2006? And not only that, those players are significantly better. I mean, we've had just this past season, MVP, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, I think Most Improved Player maybe, all international players.
Yeah.
I mean, that had never happened before last season, and I don't know that we've ever had a – well, I guess Steve Nash is Canadian, correct?
Yes.
So we've had an international MVP, but it hasn't happened very often.
And I think, was Dirk ever? Dirk was MVP
Dirk got
too.
MVP.
Okay.
And Dirk was one of the early international players to enter the league.
But I mean, I can't think of anyone besides those two until you get to Giannis.
Yeah.
It's a different world game now.
Elijah won, I guess. Did he ever get MVP?
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did.
But you're right. You can kind of name these guys pretty easily. And yet, for the upcoming year, three of the top 10 players SI is listing are foreign-born players. The foreign-born players are stepping up. You look at all the guys that were impactful. Giannis, Rudy, the supporting guys like Siakam, Jokic, Embiid, even Ben Simmons. You go down this list, and a lot of them are from that. And so you get the two or three best guys from each country, they're NBA players. And so there's more parity in the world now.
And before we end this conversation about international players, the other thing is everybody's like, well, okay, some of the teams like Argentina only had one guy who ever played in the NBA. Let's take a step back, because the game of the world is catching up to the US, if not even par with it right now. Just because they don't play in the NBA doesn't mean they're not really, really, really good. Because you go to, is it France that has, France has what, three or four NBA players, but one of their best players is a guy who's not even in the NBA and arguably should be.
Well, the thing is, just because they don't play in the NBA doesn't mean they can't play.
Exactly.
And what you see with a lot of these teams is these guys play with each other regularly.
Oh, for years, some of them for decades.
You know, you look at the Argentina team, you look at the Australia team, you look at the France team. No one is ducking a competition. These guys play together every year. And you see the Team USA, and, you know, these guys have never played with each other, most of them.
Four of them have, but you're right. The rest of them have not played a great deal with each other on a regular basis. Four of them were teammates. Yeah. So yeah,
four were teammates total.
Yeah, there were four Boston Celtics on that team.
But they haven't all played together, because Kemba's never played with.
Oh
those
no,
guys.
That's true. But three of them at least have. Yeah. Right. So,
and I was going to say, sometimes some of these foreign players they are able to excel in stuff like FIBA in the Olympics, and then they go to the NBA, and it's not that great. I remember, I think his name was Sarunas Jakusevicius. Where it was somewhere around the 2000 or 2004 Olympics, where
I remember
he was
him.
Just like single-handedly dominating the USA.
Yep.
US still won, but it was like, man, this guy's amazing. And he joined the NBA, and he was fine. He was a rotation player. And a lot of guys are like that. Like Milos Teodosic, he was this giant get 2 years ago. He goes to the Clippers, and he's fine. But, you know, he's not the barn burner that he is in the foreign league. And you still have the Utah Jazz's Ante Tomic, where he just never came over because he's able to be a really good player in his league. And part of the reason he never came over, well, the main reason, my understanding, is his wife just never wanted to move to the U.S. But
right,
he didn't want to come to the U.S. and be like the ninth or tenth guy. He's content to be a starter in a smaller league over there where he can excel.
Yeah, no, it's a world game that's become very, very good, and you can't just say the U.S. is better anymore. Clearly, you just can't. Because there are just too many good players around the world to do that now. So, trying to think, anything else for NBA news and notes?
Yeah, there's a couple I didn't put in there. I was wondering if you guys caught the Doc Rivers interview on how the Clippers got Kawhi and Paul George.
I didn't, but I saw a headline that said that he threatened to, what, move the team or something?
Yeah.
No.
He did.
That was a headline that came out. Yeah, and I know he was joking, but he threatened to move the team if they wouldn't get Kawhi. That was hilarious.
He said he was joking, but he wasn't.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And part of me wishes Kawhi had gone to the Lakers if it means that Seattle gets a team. Let's be honest.
But that's not what we're missing here. What did we miss, John?
Well, the main thrust was Doc talked about how they were going to get Kawhi, and Kawhi said that he was interested in the Clippers, but he needed to get a second guy there to really put them over the top. And the Clippers had a list of guys, and Kawhi said that he wanted, of the guys they listed, he said Paul George. And they're like, and the only reason they said Paul George is because the Clippers already knew that the Thunder were planning on blowing up the team.
Oh, boy.
And that's the way they were able to get Paul George. So, you know, Oklahoma City, it looked like all of a sudden they just gave up Paul George for a bunch of picks, but Oklahoma City had already decided, or at least Doc had got word, that Oklahoma City had already decided that they weren't going to run it back, that they were going to go ahead and look at blowing it up. So I thought that was quite interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, I saw that Ballmer was hesitant about the six picks to give up for Paul George, but like you said, Kawhi said, I want to play for you, but your team isn't good enough.
Right.
And so Doc's perspective was, if we have to give up six picks, it's not just six picks for George.
Right.
It's six picks for George and Kawhi,
three
each. And when you look at it that way, it doesn't seem so bad.
Right.
Uh-huh. I mean, you would give up three picks for one of those guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. All right. One more. You had two more things. There's one more. I'm wondering if your one more is what I'm gonna mention. Yesterday, NBA tampering rules came out.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I have one more after that. But yes.
Okay.
Tampering rules are clamping down. The owners felt like they kind of looked like idiots in the offseason with all these moves that happened within the first hour of free agency being open. They want to crack down on that, and that just seems to be the tug of war of power. Owners felt like players are getting too empowered, I guess. And so this is their way of trying to pull it back to their side. And then something else will happen in a year or two where the players will pull back to their side. And it goes on and on.
Next collective bargaining agreement is going to be ugly.
Yeah, probably. That's true. So, you know, I don't know with these new tampering rules. Some of them are going to be hard to enforce. And Silver even said, why have a rule if you can't enforce it? Well, these tampering rules, you know, I don't know how they're going to enforce some of it. Maybe it'll clamp down on some of the stuff that happened in the off season, but that was like the funnest off season ever. So
yes, it was.
I don't know.
No, I agree. But I think the tampering rules go beyond the off season. If you go back, I think this started with Anthony Davis back in February, didn't it?
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, and I hope that one of the rules, I didn't get a chance to scan down the rules, but I hope that one of them will be, look, during the season, leave each other alone. Let's get basketball done. I mean, trade deadline coming around, I get it, fine. But there's still no room for tampering during the regular season, because Anthony Davis, that situation with New Orleans is a perfect example of the negative things that happen as a result of bad trades, you know, trades gone bad or whatever. I mean, look at that team, played its heart out the rest of the way, but you saw how ridiculous Anthony Davis was, putting in 10 minutes a game and that's it. And it was like, you could see his teammates weren't happy Let's just knock that crap off during the season.
I was fine with it.
Were you?
I love the way New Orleans played that.
Well, I'm not saying I don't love the way they played it. I'm just saying there are certain levels of tampering that could have prevented that scenario from getting
but,
as bad as it did.
But if he wants out, he wants out.
I get it.
That's not a tampering thing. That's
just
him not being happy in a situation. And you're going to run into that still. You're actually seeing that that type of relationship between the team and the players find its way into the NFL. You saw that with, is it Jalen Ramsey that plays for Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Star cornerback says, I want out. I want to win. You're going to see it more and more.
You even saw that with Antonio Brown. I'm sure we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll be talking about him in a minute.
Yeah.
But.
What was the other thing you wanted to touch on, John?
Ex-Jazz man joined another team. Cabo Cephalosha is now a Houston Rocket.
Hey. Wow.
Do you wish the Jazz had brought him back?
Yes.
No.
I don't know that they could have afforded him, but I wouldn't have minded having him back.
I loved him on the team, but I do not feel like with his age and health that there was really much of a spot for him.
So, John, would you say you're not very high on him?
I would say that.
would you say the grass is greener on the other side?
Hey, that was almost so subtle that we almost went right past that, Devin. That was
what was subtle? I don't know what you're
talking about. Hey, I know since we talked last, I don't know that we had talked about the other former Jazz man that signed somewhere too.
The one that signed in Detroit?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if we had mentioned that last
week.
I was going to bring it
up. Well,
we
didn't talk last week. It's been 2 weeks.
Oh, it has been.
Yes. So I don't think
we went to Detroit.
Joe Johnson.
Joe Johnson makes his way back to the league from the Big Three.
We had.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I was going to ask you guys. This was actually going to be a quick hit, so I'll just ask you now. Do you think that the Big Three will be able to do more of this, allowing guys a path back to the NBA?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I do too. And John and I actually were at a game and watched it. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and Joe was clearly the best player on the court that whole night.
Oh, without a doubt. And that team he was on was clearly the best team on the court too. I don't think there was any question on that one. So,
yeah.
That was a lot of fun, but yeah, I'm with John on this one. Yeah, it's definitely a path back to the NBA for guys. So, all right. Well, that is it for all of NBA news and notes. Let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
You would think that was it for NBA news and notes, but I got a couple things I want to talk about. Did you guys see the video of James Harden's new, quote, signature move?
No,
I didn't. I heard their buzz about it, but I didn't see it.
He's got this new move that is a going to the side, fadeaway three, Dirk-esque off 1 foot. Mm. And it looks scary to me.
Does he take like 5 steps?
No. That's why it's scary to me. So... here, I'm going to show you guys real quick. Just a sec.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's flashy. I don't know if it's any more effective.
It seems like one of those things because the way he's pulling up on the shot, his timing, it's going off the left foot, which makes it really weird with the timing, especially when he's going to the side like that. So if he can be consistent with that, I think that's a scary shot because you don't know if he's going to do that or if he's going to pull out his other signature move of, well, now I'm going to go back, you know, 3 steps. So I don't know. Yeah. I just wondered if you saw it, if you were thinking this would be something interesting to kind of keep an eye on, how much it gets utilized this season. I don't know if I want to say it looked fun to me, but it looked of interest.
I can't help but laugh at one of the quotes in there. Harden's redefined creating space in the NBA. I'm just going to stop with that half of the quote right there.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he has. So, okay. Next quick hit. Did you see the picture of KD in his Nets gear?
I did not.
No.
Oh.
So I remember when he went to Golden State. It was really weird. Like, okay, this is this is new. But I see him in a Brooklyn jersey, and it just seems normal to me. Like, I'm okay with it.
You just called it normal. Are you normal? Are you okay? Like, I don't know that I would have defined it as normal, but he looks comfortable in it. But, like, that's hard to say. He's not out there playing in it either. I don't know.
Right, right. Well, he's not going to be for a while. But I'll say this. He looks happy, and I hope for his sake that he is. Because I'd like to get back to the point where I can tolerate KD and he can get away from all the drama that seems to follow him.
Yeah.
Okay. Another quick hit, still on basketball news. WNBA going down right now in the playoffs. You guys have any interest? Have you watched any of it?
I have not. We've talked about this before. Since Utah doesn't have a team, I just find myself not
here.
Getting interested.
I'm going to tell you where it's at, and you can decide if you want to
watch
it.
John, are you
not
interested in it?
Yeah, Mystics are looking really good right now.
I'll see.
See?
There you go.
Mystics are up 2-0 on the Aces. They'll play tomorrow, Sunday, 3 p.m. The Sun are up 2-0 on the Sparks. They will play tomorrow at 5 p.m. And if those series go the way that they're looking, you're going to have the finals in a week or two, I think. I think it's next week.
Yeah, they annihilated the Sparks. It was 94-68.
Holy crap, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the game before that, they won by 9 points. The Mystics it was close for one of them, it looks like, but I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, well, now, is it kind of like baseball? You may not like baseball, but when the World Series comes around, wouldn't you at least watch a game?
Yeah, probably.
So, I don't know.
It's getting there for me.
So I don't know.
Not quite, but almost.
Again, I would take a vested interest if Salt Lake had a team.
Right, right. But as it stands, it's kind of like baseball that way.
Yes,
we're getting to the end. Let's mention it. Maybe some people check it out, and you know, if you got young daughters who like the Jazz, who like basketball, this may be something to say. Hey, let's watch a game. And there have been some exciting aspects. There was one play that made like the trending section of Twitter, I think. See that buzzer beater?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
and it was a great shot that was also a terrible shot. I don't know why you're doing a half-court heave with 7 seconds. Especially when you've got a player under the basket for an easy layup, but
right,
hey.
Right, right. Eh, whatever.
All right. If you do watch Mystics player Elena Deladon or Del Don, I don't know which it is, one MVP. Looking at her stats for the season, 19.5 points per game, 8.2 rebounds, 2.2 assists. And then her free throw percentage is kind of out of this world, guys. 97.4% free throw percent.
Don't foul her.
Wow.
She made 114 out of 117 free throws this season.
Yeah, don't foul her.
Is there anybody in the NBA that does that?
I'm trying to think the last person that was in the mid to upper 90s, and Steve Nash was up there, but I don't think he was that high. Stockton was up there, but I don't think he was that high either.
Yeah, you get to someone who's like a 92% free throw shooter.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, don't foul him. You know, sign her up. Okay, let's talk a little bit of football. Do you guys want to talk football?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk college football. We'll touch on the locals real quick. Utah played last night. They lost. It was awful. We're not going to say any more than that.
Yes, we are.
Let's go BYU.
Wait. No, you cannot do that.
We don't need to talk about it. We really don't.
Did you watch the whole game?
Well, I didn't watch most of the second quarter because I had had enough.
Okay.
And then I came back. And I said, well, let's give this a shot. And I shouldn't have.
So John said he didn't watch it. Quick rundown, John. Mm-hmm. USC, Fotu of Utah took out USC's freshman quarterback early in two plays into the game, and he didn't come back. So they went to their third stringer, was it Fink? What's his name?
Yeah, Fink.
And yeah, that's where it started for USC. Moss went down in the, was it second quarter?
Second quarter,
and he didn't return for Utah. So those are your key injuries, and then it just kind of went from there. And honestly, Devin, I don't know if you watched the BYU-USC game last week. This game, to me, reminded me of a lot of that game. High scoring, back and forth. One team scores, the other team matches. It went back and forth all game long. And realistically, Utah had a chance to tie that up, send it into overtime, and I thought maybe we were going to have repeat of last week.
No.
But didn't it have some reminiscent to last week's kind of back and forth, high octane offensive type of showdown between two teams?
Well, that depends, Alan. It depends. I didn't watch that game.
That's why I asked if you watched that game,
If BYU's secondary was absolute garbage, then yeah, it would be reminiscent. If USC was just kind of throwing up Hail Marys throughout the game and coming down with every one of them, yeah, I'd say they had some similarities.
John? So, Michael Pittman Jr. for USC, 10 catches, 230 yards, I think, and a touchdown.
And here's something else I wanted to ask about. I think I saw that Utah had more penalties in this game than they've had in several years in any game.
Oh, yeah,
do you see that as a giant factor?
I would have said yes, but USC had just as many. It was an ugly game.
Oh, really?
From an officiating standpoint. And it's not that the officials called bad calls, because they did. But Devin, of what you saw, I would say that the officials actually called it fair, really. I mean, there were bad calls on both sides, but they were consistent.
Yes, Alan. With Pac-12 officiating, it is consistently bad. It is consistently bad.
See, I will agree with that. I will agree with that. But overall, though, I would say that it was a consistent game. Here's the other thing, John, that really was the kicker. There were a lot of personal foul calls, unsportsmanlike calls last night. Utah had two on their side in the first half. Francis Bernard with a late hit, unsportsmanlike. I almost expect one from him every single week, because that's the way Francis Bernard plays. But then you had Witt, who got one late in the first half over a call that he was not happy with, and they called an unsportsmanlike on him and threw the flag. But then you get to the second half, and there were quite a few more that were thrown, and they were thrown on USC's side too. USC had some late hits, roughing the passer, things like that, that were unsportsmanlike, that were 15-yard penalty calls that really stalled the game and stalled the offenses on both sides at certain points in the game. So really not a very clean game from flag or from the officiating standpoint. I'm Devin's bitter, and I get it. Every Ute fan should be frustrated, I think, with the way the Utes played last night, not so much with what happened with USC. Am I right, Devin? I mean, it was frustrating on the Ute side.
Let's be honest. Utah should have won that game.
Absolutely.
Utah is the better team.
Absolutely.
And there's no question about that. BYU came in, gave USC problems, and kind of laid the blueprint, and Utah just didn't take it.
Right.
And they should have. Not only that, when you're giving up big play after big play, it lands on you. You need to do something differently.
That said, I'm also going to point to the fact USC's bigger. Utah's faster. They're more sound on defense. But USC's got some big guys at key positions. I mean, Pittman's a huge receiver.
USC is always going to have big receivers.
Yeah, they are.
USC is always going to be more talented.
Right.
Because it's USC.
Right.
And as much as I can't stand their program, it's what they're going to get. And Utah just seems to have a problem going into the Coliseum. And I think that was maybe part of the difference. You're in a different environment there, you know, versus on the road. I think neutral field maybe helps Utah there.
Right. John, and I'll say this, John, there were two plays, I think, that were the biggest turnaround for the Utes last night. They doubled up on USC in time of possession for the game. 36, 37 minutes to USC's 18, I think. So they doubled up on them in time of possession. But there were two, I think, critical situations that hurt the Utes. The first was a botched handoff to Brumfield, and I think that's where you miss Moss. Remember that one that turned into a fumble, Devin?
Oh, yeah, first half.
Yep, and then you go late in the game when it's huge. The USC Trojans have the Utes backed deep in their own territory, And the one play that was bad for Huntley all game long, because I thought he played a stellar game except this one moment, got caught in the end zone, threw a pass to avoid the sack, ended up with the safety anyway, and suddenly it's a three-point game, and then USC scores on their next drive, and it was done. It was a 10-point game.
I'm not even going to say that was it. I'm going to say that the two big plays are the one you mentioned, because you have the ball right there. You just have to punch it in.
Yeah.
That's
oh, yeah.
all you have to do. And you don't even have to go right up the middle. Go to the edge, which they gave you all night long.
Yep.
But they had that one, left 7 points on the board. And then late in the game, they get the ball down to the one or the two.
Oh, and USC gets the stop.
And USC
yep.
gets the stop and pushes them back another five yards.
That's true. And it ends up in a field goal for the
it
Utes.
It ends up in a field goal, but there's four more points you left on the board. So 11 points, that you win.
And that last one was the beginning of where it kind of ended, because at that point in time, Utah had a chance to take a three-point lead at 27-24. Instead, they walk away down one, 24-23, and then two drives later end up with that safety.
Yep.
And it's now, you know, it's a three-point game, and then it went from there. No, I agree. Some critical moments last night that hurt the Utes. And Moss, hate to say it, but Moss being out really hurt Utah, I think,
in the
second
half. It
does,
but you can't make that excuse.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
And I'm not going to make it. He's going to be out for a few weeks at least, it sounds like, with a separated shoulder. You know, Huntley can't be the only guy doing things on that field.
Oh, but he had some pretty passes last night. Oh, my gosh.
He's a great player. And I don't think people want to give him the credit he deserves.
I agree.
Utah fans do, but I don't think other...
He had one over the top that went for a touchdown. I just thought, man, that is a pretty ball right there.
And he's a great dual threat. I'll give him that.
Yes, he is.
But he can't take that many hits.
Oh, almost 900 total yards in offense between the two teams last night. So anyway, that's the breakdown on that game, John. And you're bringing up locals. I mean, BYU, yeah, they get the win against USC last week. After watching last night's game, I thought, how did BYU beat USC? I'm still trying to figure out that whole thing, because story of two different games here.
At this hour right here on NFL.
So,
yeah, we'll see what the season brings. I want your take, Alan. John, I'm not going to put the pressure on you because you didn't watch the game. Is Utah... What is Utah and what is USC?
Okay, so I'm gonna make this very clear right now. Utah is as advertised. They're still, I said this last night, they are still one of the top two teams in the Pac-12. Them and Washington are the two best teams. You know, last week, a couple weeks ago, I said Oregon, but you can't deny that they're one of the two best teams in the Pac-12. USC, I'm still gonna go out on the limb, say they're a very good football team, and I think they're down the stretch, they're going to be something to be reckoned with in the South.
And I honestly think the order of those games hurt Utah.
Yeah, well, yeah,
because
absolutely.
I think when USC goes in to Provo and loses, then they have something to prove.
Well, you're USC, you have three reasons to play last night. You lost to BYU the week before. Your coach is on the hot seat, so you're playing for your coach.
Right.
And number three, the number 10 team in the country comes into your home. Why don't you get up for that?
Yep.
Everybody knows about that. How often does Utah get up for USC when they come to Salt Lake and they're a ranked opponent? We see that year out, year after year. It doesn't surprise me that the emotion was all there for USC last night. Not one bit.
Okay. Let's touch on the game today, the big game. BYU will be playing Washington, ranked number 22, at home. Game starts at 1:30. What are your guys' predictions, or what are you watching?
What do you think, John?
I think it's going to be a close game. And I'm really not sure how it's going to go, because it's been very up and down. And I guess it usually feels like that whenever you're early in the season. I'm honestly surprised that BYU was able to look as good as they did against USC, especially considering that USC then won last night. So, you know, I have a lot more optimism than I would have for this game than, say, 9 days ago.
I'm with John on this. I do too. I don't know about the close game yet. I haven't watched Washington play at all, but Chris Peterson, easily top two in the Pac-12 of coaching. That's why your two best teams are Washington and Utah, is because Witt and Peterson are your two best coaches in the Pac-12. But it I haven't watched them. I'm leery about today. I mean, I feel better about today after the showing they had against USC. Like, John, I agree with that. But just as much as this could be a close game, this could also be a blowout. I mean, Washington could come right in and just dominate from start to finish. So
yeah.
I don't know what to expect today. I just hope the Cougars do play it, and I hope it is a close game. And if the Cougars continue to improve upon their star players, you've got Wilson, and then you've got Tyson Williams, two stellar players at key positions. If you continue to work it through those two guys, especially Tyson, if he could get a ground game going today, I think it should be a close, balling kind of game between these two teams.
I got a player for you to watch.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you guys knew this. UW has an Akua.
Did not know this.
Orem wide receiver, Puka Nacua.
Oh, he's one of the cousins, I take it.
He's one of the brothers.
Or one of the brothers, okay. Brother of the one who plays at Utah now and the one who played at BYU.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was just seeing it. I think there's four brothers.
Okay. Position does he play again?
Wide receiver.
Ooh.
So junior wide receiver. Let's see. Nacua has three older brothers, each choosing different routes. This is taken from the Herald Extra. Samson Nacua at the U. Isaiah Nacua, defensive end who committed to BYU but never played. And then Kai Nacua, the safety that you're all familiar with,
yep.
And currently with the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
So, if you want the guy to watch that has kind of a BYU connection, that could be interesting.
I guarantee you he'll look to, if he's a regular contributor for that team, he's going to look to be a presence today in Provo.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's got family watching. He's got people. He's going to be a presence.
Yeah, the title of the article is Nacua starting to make waves for Washington football. So
yep, watch out.
Let's see how that one plays out.
Okay.
All right. So score, or not even score predictions, victory predictions. Who are you taking?
I'm going against the homer. I'm going Washington. I think Washington wins this game.
John?
Yeah, I gotta go with Washington.
All right, let's go Dogs.
Wait a minute. Don't root on the Dogs.
I do. And you're not going to believe this, Alan, but I was wearing UW shirts before I was ever wearing University of Utah shirts.
All right, then.
I have family that are Washington alums.
Up in the Seattle area.
Up in the Seattle area.
Okay.
So when I was growing up,
all right,
they would be sending all these shirts, and I was like, yeah, Huskies are cool. And then I, you know, realized my Utah fandom,
right,
and went, I still have a soft spot for him.
Okay.
Other local game, Utah State will be playing San Diego State. That's a late game on CBS Sports if you want to watch that. 8:30.
They should win that.
Yeah.
They should win that.
San Diego State, I'm trying to pull their record real quick. Let's see what they got. They won last week against New Mexico State 31-10. San Diego State did beat UCLA couple weeks ago, 23-14. I don't know if that's anything really to be that proud of.
Because it's UCLA.
It's
all
UCLA.
That good.
They're just struggling in this Chip Kelly era. And their first game of the year, maybe their most impressive victory. They won 6-0 against the best team in the state of Utah, the Weber State Wildcats. Weber State had a chance at that game, man. They should have won that.
So we really can't gauge how good San Diego State is.
No, we can't. And this is my problem with early season or preseason rankings. You have no idea how good anyone is except for a few teams at the top. Or some teams that are just really, really, really bad. I mean, you can tell that they're really bad. But yeah, this is one of those. I don't know. It'll be interesting for Utah State, I think. I'll be turning this one on. I just want to run through a quick top 25. If there's any games that interest you, or if you want to say, hey, I think this one's going to win, You had the Utes play. You had Boise State win against Air Force last night as well. You've got number 11 Michigan against number 13 Wisconsin. Number 9 Florida against Tennessee. If you want to see how good maybe BYU is, you can watch that one and see what Tennessee's
like.
I'm
not even sure there's going to be a contest in that one.
23 Cal against Mississippi. Number 4 LSU against Vanderbilt. Alabama ranked number 2 against Southern Miss. Ohio State against Miami of Ohio. That one's sure to be close. Auburn against Texas A&M. That's 8 versus 17. Number 25 TCU goes up against SMU. University of Central Florida is ranked 15th. They go up against Pitt. Number 16 Oregon against Stanford.
Can we just that Central Florida
That's
game
a good one.
Intrigues me, because can we talk about how good Central Florida's been for what, 3 years now?
Yeah, they've been good, but aren't they in like the American Conference?
They are, but they're making a case, much like Boise and TCU have over the years, and even Utah, that they deserve to be in the conversation of the big boys because they're a good football team.
And that's why we need to go to an 8-team playoff.
Agreed.
At least. You know, a team like that can get in and have a chance.
I mean, UCF's beat the big boys a couple times the last couple of years. They're a very sound team.
They are. They're just in the same boat Boise State is. They have to go undefeated to have a chance.
Yeah, they do.
And with the 4-team thing, I just don't think it'll ever happen until they go to 8 teams.
Right.
And they should. It should be the Power 5. It should be the Group of 5. And then it should be the top 2 after that, right?
Yeah.
Because then you could have two non-Power 5 teams in that playoff. You would have more of a chance.
Right.
Because what happens is if you have a very good Notre Dame team, which we've had the past couple seasons have been competitive, one making it into the playoff.
Right.
One of those spots is gone. And that just comes down to their schedule. Notre Dame plays one of the hardest schedules in all of college football. So I don't know. I think you definitely have to go to 8 teams.
Right.
Yep. Rounding this out, BYU fans, Virginia, number 21, playing Old Dominion. Number 12, Texas, playing Oklahoma State. Clemson, number 1, playing Charlotte. Don't even bother. Number 7, Notre Dame, travels to Georgia. Number 3.
Go Dogs. I mean, sorry.
Mm. Yeah, go Dogs. Go Huskies, not Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs.
I'm nervous about that one. That's going to be hopefully a good game.
You should be nervous about that one.
That's a tough game. Georgia's good.
I know.
Number 24, Arizona State plays Colorado. Number 19, Washington State plays UCLA. And that rounds out your top 25.
Well, there you go.
So I'm trying to think if there was anything else worth hitting on. NFL, it just seems like a quarterback massacre.
Yes.
Everyone's dropping.
Yep.
You've had Big Ben out for the season. You have Drew Brees out for the next 6 weeks.
Do we want to talk about who ends up taking up the reins for them this week? Have they even announced it yet?
I honestly don't even know.
You've got two guys capable. What do you think, John? Does Taysom Hill get a chance now?
I don't know if he'll start, but I think he will take some reps there.
Well, they got
Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah,
they've got
Bridgewater. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You've got Bridgewater and you've got Hill. Who is your guy out of those two? That's the question.
Last week they went with Bridgewater.
Right.
I don't think it went as well as they would like. So I don't know.
So you think he'll get a few reps, John? You don't think he's necessarily going to play a lot at the quarterback position?
Yeah, I'm liking more and more for him to get more time there. If they start Bridgewater again, okay. But I do think that they're gonna run some plays for him. I mean, they did that every once in a while, even with Breeze starting. So I can see them doing the same thing.
Right.
Well, they're playing Seattle, so Seattle's got a pretty decent defense, I think.
Yes,
we'll see what happens.
Yes,
yeah.
They do.
Oh, and Cam Newton's missing this week too.
Yes, he is.
You had that happen. You had was it Foles that's out for Jacksonville?
Yep, Foles went down collarbone, I think it was. I'm trying to remember, something like that. But yeah, he's out for a while.
You have, it's not an injury, but Eli Manning is now on the bench. Do you guys think he gets another chance with the Giants or with another team, or is this kind of the end for Eli?
I think he'll want to trade, but I think this is pretty much it.
I agree.
Maybe he'll get a trade and he'll start somewhere else, but I think this is really it. This is his last year, I would say.
Giants made that very clear when they drafted their young, is it Daniel Jones?
Yeah,
is that his
Jones.
Name? When they drafted Jones, they made that very clear. So, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta ask, guys, and I'm sorry to bring it up, and people are going to roll their eyes and say, why is he doing this? Every time there's a quarterback opening, the conversation comes up
Colin
in the media.
Kaepernick.
Should Colin Kaepernick get a phone call?
Yes, he should.
And it seems like it's not going to happen. And I'm not going to, I guess my question is, shouldn't we all want the same thing? And I said this on Twitter, even if you hate the guy and you're like, well, he sucked at football, he shouldn't have a chance. Well, one, the 49ers switched him from doing what he was good at to trying to put him in the pocket.
Yep.
The thing that gave him success, they took away from him.
Yep.
So that kind of comes down to a coaching decision, in my opinion.
I 100% agree. And it went beyond the coaching because the coach who made the decision is no longer with him. But he made the decision because the higher-ups, I think, wanted him to do it too, because they were a mess in the front office. They're not it so much anymore, but they were. So, yeah, I think it went well beyond coaching.
So it could be that. It could be he's terrible. But if he's terrible and you hate him, wouldn't you love for him to get a chance with one of these teams, fall on his face, and then we stop having this conversation? I want him to get a chance because I think he's better than some of the guys who are going to be starting this week. John, is it possible that even after all this time, he's better than whatever product Pittsburgh throws on the field, or, you know,
it's possible, but how long has he been out now? Three years now. So, you know, I mean, if he wasn't making headlines doing all the other things, would we even be talking about him as a possibility as a guy who's been out of the NFL for 3 years?
Probably not.
But what's he making headlines for? He's not making a lot of headlines. He's not.
Well, he's making headlines for political stuff. He's not making headlines for.
Right. But I mean, his headline is he was in a commercial.
Well, and then over the summer, there was that big hullabaloo. What was it in Arizona? It was between Nike and so and so. And
yeah,
that made news too.
I don't know.
I know.
It's weird that he's making headlines in a way that I feel like he's not even trying to make headlines.
Agreed.
He's just out there trying to get paid and giving his opinion to Nike. And I don't know.
Oh, no, that was a headline.
Yeah, it was a headline, but it was.
That was him going, hey, very public company Nike, I think you should end this because I think the Betsy Rogg flag is racist. And
yeah.
I mean, that's not a quiet letter.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I really do. And, you know, love him or hate him, it's just one of those things. It's like, give the guy a chance and let's be done with this.
Right.
So
if you don't touch on the one thing that we said we'd wait to talk about, then come on, dude. The elephant in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Oh,
I forgot, guys.
Somebody got released this week from his second team.
Yep. Yeah. Antonio Brown goes from making, what, like $30 million this year to making $153,000 or some ridiculously low number.
If he could have just held on till Monday, he would have been able to secure millions and millions of dollars. But
do you think that's why?
That new allegation came out. No, well,
one of the reasons.
Partly, but when that new allegation came out, that was all they needed to go. Okay, let's just. Yes, he caught for 56 yards last week, but we'll save ourselves millions and millions of dollars and a PR headache if we just go ahead and cut him now.
I agree. Yeah.
What is wrong with the guy? I mean,
I don't know.
Two weeks ago, we were asking the question, is Antonio Brown a genius? Is he out here playing chess and the rest of us are playing checkers?
A year ago, we were talking about him being the best wide receiver in the NFL.
And now where are we?
Yeah.
Guys, we're to the point where O.J. Simpson is giving Antonio Brown legal advice via Twitter videos.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
That is the point that we've fallen to. That's outrageous, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness.
When the juice is like, hey, I wish I had sent him that text message. I'm a legal genius. Don't leave your gloves at the arena. I don't know, man.
Can I ask you guys, aside from Antonio Bryant, one last thing I want to bring up, not that it's a quick hit for you, but I want to ask you two a question. Players calling it quits at difficult or different times in the NFL, the latest being Andrew Luck, and we've talked about this before.
Yes.
I just read a piece yesterday or the day before, ESPN did kind of a retrospective piece where they caught up with Dante Davis, is it his name? Vernon Davis's brother that played for the Bills for a short time and was with the Colts at another time. And, okay. And you remember who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the story where last year in the Bulls game or the Bills game, halftime, walked out?
He walked out and was done.
Read this article, very interesting kind of retrospect piece where Davis talked about how he sat there on the sideline and just it suddenly hit him mentally. Like, my body is shutting down. My mind is now caught up. I can't play this game anymore. I'm not sure I can give it my 110% anymore. I'm done. And he got up, told his coach he's done, walked to the locker room, and the players and the coach didn't know what he meant. Waterboy, whoever it was, follows him back, and he gets dressed, doesn't even shower, gets dressed, closes the locker, calls his wife, says, I'm on my way, calls his brother, middle of the game, who thought it was odd he had this thing, calls him back later, says, I'm done, I quit. He goes home. But talking about it in retrospect, he talked about why. He received so much hate from teammates and fans alike that called him a quitter. But he finally decided mentally he couldn't continue. And now you have Andrew Luck, who's recently retired. How do you feel about these players and making this stand and doing these types of things the way they're doing it? John?
I think there's a growing, how do I put this? We're seeing more and more that it seems like football players are retiring younger and younger with injury concerns, and I think it's a trend that we're going to see continue. You know, Andrew Luck was a big one. Rob Gronkowski, I wasn't surprised he retired anyway, but when you hear his reasons why, where he was just so injured every year that he just didn't think his body could handle another year, even though he's still putting up awesome numbers and all that stuff. And so with more and more of these players, we're going to see it. And, you know, I remember shocked when Calvin Johnson retired.
Yeah.
And I saw the picture of his fingers going, oh my gosh, his fingers are like permanently deformed now from the game.
Right.
So,
he was in the news this week too.
Calvin Johnson was.
Megatron was saying that, he had sustained a concussion at least one every season when he was playing.
Right.
And it just became the norm of, well, I'm going to be seeing stars, but I'm going to be back out there in a few minutes, you know, and just having to play through it. And I, with what you're asking, Alan, I can understand having a problem with your guy quitting at halftime.
Yeah.
I would have a problem doing that. I like just in a basketball game.
Right.
But the thing we have to keep in mind, and tell me if I'm wrong here, we talk about the NBA most of the time. That's what our focal point is on this podcast. And we talk about how the league has gotten bigger, it has gotten faster, it has gotten stronger. And I think you can say the same for football.
Absolutely.
And when you think about that and the toll that that has to take on these guys who are taking these hits, who are taking hits to the head, who are being thrown on their backs, head slamming against the turf.
Even when the league is trying to protect them.
Right. Even when you're trying to be protected, it doesn't always go that way. You know, and fans love big hits. We just do. And I have no problem with these guys wanting to hang it up.
Do you, and understanding retrospect, the reason for Davis's and his thought process in the locker room, do you have an issue with him quitting at halftime though?
I do a little bit.
Do you?
I stay on the sideline. Just don't play. Okay. tell the coach, hey, I can't go the rest of the game. And just stay there and support your guys. You don't have to walk all the way out. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's where I would be at. But I guess if you want to think about this from a perspective of a normal everyday person, let's say you're eligible to retire. You've got enough money, you're set up for the rest of your life. And you enjoy your job, and that's why you keep going. But one day you start realizing that the fire is going out. You're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
Not only that, let's say it's taking a toll on your health. What do you do?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I don't have an issue with Davis, because you look back on Jordan. Jordan retired, what, three different times? But it was interesting to hear at least one of those times him talk about the fire just wasn't there anymore. And whether it was he had to walk away from the game for 2 or 3 years to earn that fire back, whatever it is. And Jordan's not the best example here, but an athlete, and in the case of Davis, an athlete who feels like he just mentally he's caught up with his body, he just doesn't have what it takes to press on anymore. I don't have an issue with that. And kudos actually to him to recognize that at a critical point in a game. And I think what hurt people the most was his team was down 28-0 at halftime, and they're thinking, dude, you're down 28-0, that's why you quit. No, that's not why.
Right.
The timing wasn't the best, but kudos to him for making a decision that it was probably a very difficult one to make.
And that's the thing. John, I'd love your thoughts, but I have so much respect for these guys who are smart enough to hang it up when they know they should hang it up, even if it seems like it should be early. You know, if you could play a couple more years and you're willing to leave money on the table because of your health, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and my whole thing is, you look at the NFL and the NBA, and the guys are getting bigger, stronger, faster. The NBA has taken great lengths to reduce the violence of the sport. NBA has never been as violent as the NFL. But just the other day, I saw someone retweet one of those videos of basketball in the 80s where there are just these brawls and, you know, Bill Laimbeer and Dennis Rodman, like, purposely hurting guys and you know, injuries. They don't have to worry about injuries caused by other hits, whereas the NFL, that is the entire point, is getting hit, hitting and getting hit. And younger me might have been like, hey, you quit on your team. I don't agree with quitting at halftime. I say you wait to the end of the game. But in general, when these guys get their millions of dollars and then they look at their health, then that's the best decision for them, and you can't argue with it.
Right. Okay. Sorry for throwing that in at the end of your quick hits, but it was on my mind, and it had been for a couple days. So.
No, and it's good discussion, especially where these things came out in the news this week.
Yeah. So if you get a chance, go back, check out that article. I saw it posted to ESPN, saw it in my app. I think it was 2 days ago, Thursday or Friday, and read it. Really good piece. And it talked in, like I said, in retrospect, it talked about what he's doing nowadays too. So real interesting thing to read up on. All right, that's going to do it there. Let's move over to, we're done with quick hits, right,
yeah,
Dev?
Yeah, okay. Those are long hits.
Yeah, they were. Moving on to pop culture. John, you've got a movie you want to talk about.
Yes, I saw Hustlers last week, and it's based on a true story of these women who worked at a strip club who came up with a scam to be able to fleece a lot of money out of the clientele that would go there. And it stars Constance Wu, who was the star of Crazy Rich Asians last year, and Jennifer Lopez is in it, and she's kind of the mastermind. And the thing that really stuck out to me is it's the best acting Jennifer Lopez has done in forever. And part of me wonders, has she just not had good parts, or did something wake her up in this, or I'm not really sure what, but it's like my favorite role I've seen for her since she was in Out of Sight with George Clooney 20 years ago. So, and so she was my highlight of the film, but the film in general is a pretty decent crime caper. It's not like there's murders going on or anything, but it still kind of has that feel, like a Scorsese light feel to it. And, you know, the cast overall is pretty good. There's a lot of entertaining characters in there. And I really enjoyed it. And I would say the main reason I enjoyed it is because I was impressed to see Jennifer Lopez get a good part again and then make the most of it.
Okay. Hustlers. I've heard enough about it. It's been getting some airtime recent. So, and J-Lo's been on a couple of late night shows talking about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Her and Jimmy Fallon did a History of Dance.
Yes, they did.
Video, which is pretty good.
Oh, it's hilarious. It was great. So, I did rent a movie this last week. Finally got a chance to watch Men in Black International. Did you ever see that?
No, I got terrible reviews and I avoided it.
Yeah. Somehow I thought that would be your answer. we rented it as a family and watched it. I didn't think it was all that terrible, honestly. I don't know. I mixed feelings because I was a big Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones fan and felt like that was where it was at. But it was a decent film. It really was. And for all the talk of maybe the story, this and that, everything else about it, the lead character, I forget her name already, was really good in this. And I thought I enjoyed her role and I enjoyed her, the way she took center stage throughout this film. I thought it was good. You know, Chris Hemsworth, good. I don't know. I can see why people didn't necessarily like it. On the other hand, I was entertained. It was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So I was leery of it when it first came out anyway, because like I said, I'm old school Men in Black fan and had a hard time with this one. Number three is where it started to fall off for me as it is. A lot of people liked number three and one didn't like number two, but I liked the first two a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, had a chance to see that. Also, I am starting on Netflix the Dark Crystal series. Have you started that yet?
I have not, but yeah, I've been looking forward to that.
I did, by the way, on Netflix, before you watch it, if it's been a while since you've seen the movie, it is on Netflix as well. I watched the movie first to refresh my memory because it's been a very long time. I still think that movie holds. It's rough, of course, but it's rough puppeteering and this and that because it's 30, 35 years old, something like that. 37 years old. But it still holds as far as I'm concerned. And then watching this series, I'm two episodes in, but it's already breaking my heart because you're watching a prequel. You're watching it all fall apart and get to where the movie was. But overall, the puppeteering in this is fantastic. It's a well-written story. They give you a lot of narration and background leading into this. So far, I really, really like it. I think it's beautiful. So worth checking out. I can't wait to finish it and really give my final thoughts on it, but I'm liking it so far. So anything else? Devin, you got anything?
I watched a little bit of Netflix. I caught part 9 or part 8, whichever it is, of The Ranch. You guys probably haven't watched that.
I don't know. Didn't that come out this week?
Yeah. I benched it in 24 hours. I enjoyed the show. The show has been canceled, so this is this part, and then there's going to be one more next spring, I think. So I'm glad they have an opportunity to wrap it up and kind of, you know, put an end to the show rather than just cutting it off.
Right.
But if you liked the previous parts, you'd like this one. If you haven't watched it, you know, I don't know if it's your thing or not. It's got Sam Elliott. It's got Ashton Kutcher. It's got, is it Dak Shepard? I think it is in the later parts. So.
Yeah.
It's got a good cast. It's raunchy. It's funny if you like that kind of thing. So, I also watched The Brawler. I'm not sure if either of you have seen that.
I have not.
It's a boxing.
Brawler. No.
It's a boxing movie. I'm usually huge on anything boxing. Like Cinderella Man, it's one of my favorite shows. You know, I could watch any of the Rocky movies.
Oh, yes. And the latest Rocky follow-ups, the Creed movies.
Creed, yeah.
Yeah.
But this one has a tie-in to Rocky.
Oh, really?
This is the story of the guy who inspired Rocky.
Oh.
So, cool. It's okay. I'm trying to look it up so I can tell you a little bit more about it. You know, just what the.
And a guy plays Sylvester Stallone in it.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So it says, newly famous after challenging Muhammad Ali for a championship title, boxer Chuck Wepner spirals down a slippery slope of being a celebrity. So it's not a ton of boxing, but it's it It's heavily influenced by
I'm already seeing where it influences Rocky. I'm already seeing it.
Yeah. So, and like you said, John, it has someone in there playing Sly. So if you like boxing shows, it might be worth watching. It's short. It's only an hour and 34 minutes. So, and what's weird is I just noticed that there's another one. There's another one called, it says Chuck, but then when I click into it, it says The Bleeder.
Okay.
So you could watch The Brawler and The Bleeder. That's weird.
Oh, there was a movie called Chuck. Is that the same?
Yeah, it says Chuck.
With Liev Schreiber. Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember that movie coming out.
Yeah, that one was 3 years ago. This one's a new one. The Brawler just came out this year. So
is it a continuation of the story, a reboot, or what is it?
I think it's another take on the story.
It's okay. Just another, it's now like gotta, dueling watch Zambata the other movies. Or, yeah.
So I don't
sweet.
Know. If you like that sort of thing, you know, all watch right. it. But kind of a historical, what do they call those? A documentary, but it's live action, or you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was okay. Nothing great to write home about, but that's my viewings, my contributions.
Sweet. All right. Anything else? I think that's it for this week. We want to thank you all for joining us for yet another episode edition of Jedi and Germs 201, and we're going to continue on right on from there for a while. We appreciate you being along each and every week. Thank you for supporting us, for listening. Share us with your friends, your family. Leave us a review. Find us anywhere, Jedi and Germs. Thank you all. We'll talk to you real soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.